I appreciate very much the invitation to fill in on a Sunday when Nathan and Carrie are enjoying their sabbatical. Word is that nobody knows where they are. Is that what I understand? Probably an important thing for a sabbatical to not have the phone ring and other kinds of things. But I'm sure they are being very faithful stewards of the opportunity that you have given them to find refreshment and rest and some renewed energy for the ministry that you share with them here. Yours is a special place, I think you probably know. Your church is admired from afar by lots of people who find in you and what you do here an important lesson in what the church should be in all places. The way you care for one another, the way you minister in your community, building bridges, breaking down barriers, and providing a hospitable place for people to come and bring their whole selves to this place. It's a gift that you provide that's very important and very significant in God's kingdom, I believe. I was feeling really proud of myself for coming all the way from the other side of Atlanta to be here with you today, and then I met some people who came all the way from Texas. I've been to Texas. That's a long way, a long, long way. And we're grateful for your presence and hope your visit together is an important and special one this time. Whenever any part of the family of faith comes together to worship, an important part of that is the fellowship that you obviously enjoy and share when you come together on Sunday mornings and other times. Another important feature of that worship time is the sharing of concerns that you bring with you to this place. Concerns about employment, concerns about medical concerns, concerns about uncertain futures, joys and blessings that are celebrated and shared with one another. This is an important part of being together as part of the family of faith as well, and you do that with great care and sensitivity already today. But another important part of the gathering for worship is listening to the testimony of those who have traveled this road before us. William has introduced the idea that for this month, careful attention is going to be given to the book of Ephesians in the New Testament. I applaud that choice because this is one of the ways in which the family of faith keeps connection with the roots of the tree of which we are branches. It's one of the ways that we discover what it means to be a fellowship of covenant faith rooted in what God has disclosed of God's self through the covenant of the Old Testament and through Jesus Christ in the New. And so our opportunity to spend some time with the letter to Ephesians is a very special kind of opportunity to listen to testimony that can help shine light on the path as we travel it now by those who have traveled it many, many years before. Some time ago, I developed the habit of reading an advice column that started showing up in the newspaper by a woman named Abigail Van Buren. Do any of you remember her name? Dear Abby, she's known as. I think her daughter, whose name is Jean Phillips, continues that practice today, and the ad is still in the paper. It happens to be at the bottom of a page of one of those puzzles that I do that they say will keep your mind from going bad when you get old. I'm working on that problem. And that advice column is there, and I usually read it. One of the things that I've enjoyed about reading those advice columns, reading somebody else's mail, is that sometimes the questions are so far out that you just believe somebody made this up. It's not real. But sometimes the questions have to do with an issue that may be of concern to me, too. Something to do with a work relationship or a job decision or some aspect of citizenship or some way of responding to some dilemma that may come along. And the advice of the advice column writer is as pertinent to me as it is to the one who wrote the letter the first time. So there's some value in reading other people's mail sometimes because that mail may contain something in it that's relevant to who we are and who I am. So as I was thinking about a sermon title for our time together this morning, the idea of reading somebody else's mail occurred to me because that's exactly what we're doing when we read the letter of Ephesians. Ephesians is written to a church, or perhaps to several churches in the New Testament world, to address the kinds of concerns that grew out of their community as they sought to be followers of Christ, and as they sought to deal with the problems that naturally arise in a community's life. hostilities of one kind or another that they brought with them, frictions that may have developed in their own conversations and relations with each other, and differing ideas about what it meant to be followers of Jesus in a time that was a complex world, not maybe as much as ours, but still with many kinds of tugs and pulls that pull their attentions in various directions. So the writer of Ephesians, in various places, as you will see this month, as each Sunday you address part of it, the writer of Ephesians picks out an issue that is of concern to this community over 2,000 years ago now, that was a problem for them, something that got in the way of their discipleship, got in the way of their being a community of faith that reflected the life and the purpose of Jesus. And the writer wrote to them about that, and we've now read, with Reginald's help, the scripture text that we'll return to in just a minute. But this letter is a powerful piece of the New Testament. William spoke just a little while ago about the importance of paying attention to the New Testament or to the Bible generally. I've noticed in lots of parts of church life, as we've all lived them, I guess, but in the parts that I've lived in, sometimes it's a lot easier to argue about the Bible than it is actually to read it or to study it or to seek to listen to it. We argue more over our understandings of its authority than we do over its insights that might help us live better. And so there's a lot of value in doing what you will be doing this month, of actually sitting down and listening to somebody else's mail that's addressing the life issues of faith as we experience them. Some time ago, I saw a good part of a TV program that had to do with the Civil War. You may know Ken Burns, who produces these things, and this was one of his productions, I think. And in the review of the Civil War, which now is about 150 years ago, I guess, there was a combination of the work of historians who outlined and summarized the major battles and the movements here and the movements there and some of the forces that were at work and all of the larger picture, part of the picture of the Civil War. But interspersed in that documentary were some excerpts from letters that soldiers had actually written home to their wives and families from the battlefield. Combined historical overview by historians, which explained the significance of the Battle of Gettysburg and the Battle of Antietam and the other parts of the Civil War, letters from lowly soldiers, I guess we'd say, writing home about the experience of actually participating in that war directly. Think about the difference between those two kinds of literature. Historical reviews and surveys that give the overview of the significance of it all, and the intimate, personal, direct communications of people who are actually participating on the ground in what's going on. Our New Testament has that same kind of literature diversity in it. The Gospels provide us with the overview of what it meant to be followers of Jesus Christ. It provides us with the overview of who he was, what his relationship to God was, what his agenda for the world was. The Gospels give us the historian's view of what was going on in the early days of the Christian movement. Also in that New Testament are the letters from the ground. Paul's letters, most of them, but letters from some other people too, who were written, interestingly, before any of the Gospels were. Sometimes students of the Bible are surprised to learn that the letters in the New Testament are the earliest documents in it. The Gospels were written later, after more time had allowed them the opportunity to think about what all this meant, so they could write the more theoretical overview. But the letters are those letters from soldiers on the battlefield at the time. They're contemporary with what's going on. So when we read Ephesians, let's remember that we're reading a letter from the ground that's giving day-to-day responses to day-to-day issues. And we'll listen for one of those issues in just a minute. Compared to the Gospels, which are valuable in their own right, as providing us with a large overview of what it all means. So we have a rich library in the New Testament of Gospels, letters, and then, of course, the book of Revelation at the end, which is its own particular style of literature. We'll study that sometime, too, maybe. But that's what we have here. So The letter writer of Ephesians is looking at life in that early Christian community and discovering that in that life there are divisions among people who genuinely are followers of Christ, but who bring with them backgrounds that are so different that it's hard for them to connect their experience with one another. In that case, the differences had to do with Christians who had been Jews, growing up in the covenant faith of ancient Israel, with the laws and the regulations of the Old Testament and the guidance of the priests and the rabbis, seeing Jesus as the fulfillment of what their faith had hoped for so many years in the person of a Messiah. And they believed that there was a close and direct connection between their Jewish faith and their new Christian faith. They believed that it was essential to see both the roots and the trunk of the tree before understanding its blossoms and its fruit. But also in that community were some people who were drawn to Jesus from other backgrounds, people who had maybe suffered a bit under the exclusionary thinking of some Jews, people who had been put on the outside or moved to the margins of life, who had somehow or other felt excluded from the promises that the covenant faith of Israel had provided. They were drawn to Jesus because he seemed to offer to them a word of welcome in spite of that difference. He said to them, "Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden. Come to me, those of you who feel excluded from the mainstream of what religious life has been. Come to me and we'll think more carefully and more directly about a relationship to God that is not dependent on what your background happens to be." Well, it's easy to understand the appeal of that kind of invitation, isn't it? And many people who did not share Jewish background came in to be part of the early church. By the time this letter was written, there were significant components of both of those backgrounds in the life of the church. And in that difference, evidently, was some serious conflict. The people with Jewish backgrounds believed that you needed to become Jewish first before becoming Christian. The people of non-Jewish background chafed under that kind of restriction and believed their faith experience was just as valid, even though they had not come that way to get there. And so friction had developed. And in the text that Reginald read for us just a little while ago, we see a clear message from the writer of this letter that tries to connect the life and the death of Jesus with the agenda that God has for all of God's people to overcome those kinds of barriers that they themselves created for themselves, to separate themselves from others, to overcome those barriers in such a way that they could become one family of faith, one people, not denying the difference of their background because that was a part of who they were too, but understanding that this new community was going to be based not on those differences, but upon what they shared as a transforming experience from their relationship with Jesus Christ. And so we hear in this text those words very carefully where the writer is saying to them, the meaning of Jesus' life and death on the cross is the breaking down of the wall. Did you notice that word? That word was there. Destroying the wall that exists that separates people from people who belong to the family of God, and establishing instead peace, which is a wholeness and a fittingness of people's lives together. So it's easy to see how this was an issue in those days. The question now for us, and this brings us to the essential point of this particular text for our lives today, it lies right here. I don't know that the ancient world has a monopoly on hostility across lines of difference. It seems to me that at every period of history that we look at, it's not Jew and Gentile issues most of the time, but there are other issues. There were times when Protestants and Catholics had major issues. There were times when Christians and non-Christians had major issues. There have been times when blacks and whites had issues. There are times when people of different political persuasions have issues. We're not strangers to hostility. If I were to ask you to, can you imagine a world in which people allow the differences among them to create more hostility than hospitality? We wouldn't have to think very hard to come up with it, would we? That could be any time, including our own. And so there's a message here in this passage from Ephesians that can be addressed to any time in history, and the value of embracing and participating in this correspondence, is reading somebody else's mail, is to see the validity of its point for challenges that face us. So I would ask you, just as a way of reflecting on this a bit, to think about some of the barriers, some of the walls, some of the barriers that you have encountered in your life as you have sought to live out your dreams and your aspirations, barriers that have stood in the way of your being able to be the person that you believe God has called you to be. The barriers may have been racial, they may have been gender-related, they may have been related to any other number of things that we use to divide ourselves from each other. Think about what those barriers have been and the impact of them on your life. And I suspect most of us would be able to name some, maybe some of us more than others. But then there's another question that this one's a little more troubling to me, and that is to think about ways in which I have participated in the creation of some of those barriers or in the toleration of some of those barriers without raising my voice in protest about them. Sometimes it's easier just to keep quiet and not muddy the waters or not stir up conflict. And there have been times when I regret and now repent of having kept quiet when I could and should have said something about a barrier that was standing in the way of human community. Perhaps you can think of times in your life when that kind of experience came your way. And then another question that the text invites us to look at, in addition to the barrier part, is to listen to what it says about the importance of building bridges to overcome those barriers. If we are to be followers of the Christ whose cross has destroyed the wall that separates human beings from one another and replaces hospitality with hostility, suspicion, and fear, then it's important for us to ask the question, okay, if I am a follower of this Christ, in what way am I participating in the building of bridges that might overcome some of that hostility in the direction of hospitality? I suspect in your life, as I can think of in mine, there have been people and circumstances and places and institutions that have served as bridges for me, that have helped me overcome barriers and obstacles that might have been in my way for something. Bridges that have often come in the form of personal concern and care and encouragement and belief and inspiration that have helped me see beyond the barrier to what might be on the other side, and more than that, see a way to get across the barrier to the other side of it. I think perhaps you can think of people who have done that for you as well. People who have been bridge builders in your experience that have helped you get from a place where you were to a place that you wanted to be when there was something in the way that kept you from getting there. Then I guess perhaps the most important question of all is not the have-beens, but the what-nows. If all of this is the case, then do we need to leave this place looking for ways that we can build more bridges than the ones we've experienced already, that we can look for barriers and find ways to build bridges across them, that we can embrace the content and the inspiration of somebody else's mail here who found a writer, a wise leader of the early Christian movement, writing to a church or churches, saying to them in the face of their conflicts, here's what you can do if you are followers of Christ. You can build bridges across the barriers that we set for ourselves. And he even goes so far as to suggest that there's no more important agenda for a Christian living than that. Let's listen one more time, not read nearly as well as Reginald did, a few of the verses that we had here. Are they still up? No, they're not still up there. So let me read them. For he, that is Christ, is our peace. In his flesh, he has made both groups into one and has broken down the dividing wall, that is, the hostility between us. He has abolished the law with its commandments and ordinances that he might create in himself one new humanity in place of the two, thus making peace, and might reconcile both groups to God in one body through the cross, thus putting to death that hostility through it. So he came and proclaimed peace to you who were far off and peace to those who were near, identifying the two groups. For through him, both of us have access in one spirit to the Father. So then you are no longer strangers and aliens, but you are citizens with the saints and also members of the household of God, built on the foundation of the apostles and the prophets with Christ himself as the cornerstone. I recommend to you reading somebody else's mail. You'll be doing that during this month as you look at the letter to Ephesians. And as you do with each lesson, listen for the concern or the question that the writer is addressing. It's pretty clear here. He's addressing the question of hostility that still exists between people who share different backgrounds. And he's saying to them, Christ has broken that down. That doesn't need to be. What is now the case is a new reality that overcomes that difference and has built a bridge across it and has created a new part of what the family of faith is. I wish you the best as you do this. I promise you that there are people who you do not even know that look to you as an example of bridge building, of listening for the testimony of those who travel the road before us, and are grateful for the blessing of thinking of ourselves as being part of the same family of faith as you. Let's pray together, shall we?